Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us again this week at The Rad Life. We have a couple amazing ladies in our studio today, Tanya Brown and her recent book. Thank you for the copy, Tanya.
You're welcome.
Finding Peace Amid the Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide. And Patricia Winskunas, how'd I do?
You did very good.
Okay. from Crime Survivors. And I'm going to let the ladies introduce themselves. And I'll ask the same question we've usually asked on the show, which is, I'll start with you, Patricia, if you don't mind, and say, how did you end up where you are today, where you're doing what you're doing through Crime Survivors, for example? Can you share a little bit of your story, whatever you're comfortable with, as far as how you found yourself to be in what you do today?
Sure, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate the opportunity. And for me, I think it's just with faith there is hope. For me personally, whatever your faith is, whoever's listening, but for me personally, with faith there is hope. And for living a lifetime, I always say, of victimization, mm-hmm. I was victimized at a young age and then re-victimized because I didn't get the help and support and the resources. And even though I had faith going out throughout my life, I didn't really turn to my faith. I didn't surrender it as much. And then to skip through a lot of years and a lot of things that happened throughout my life, on April 4th of 2002, my personal trainer came into my house, drugged me, wrapped my face and head in saran wrap, beat me black and blue, threatening to not only kill me, but to kill my son.
Oh, wow.
And so I think that I still at that moment didn't have self-esteem, self-value, self-respect, enough about myself. But when someone threatens to kill your child, mm-hmm. I think the inner grizzly bear comes out and the faith and the hope to save your child and also to save myself at that moment. So I was able to get over my 12-foot balcony in order to eventually get to a neighbor's house to call 911. He was charged with deliberate premeditated attempted murder, burglary in the first degree, assault with a deadly weapon, and criminal threats. Through our legal system, unfortunately, I don't believe that we have a justice system. I think we have a legal system out of control, frankly. And he ended up serving 120 days.
Oh, my God.
That's it. And, you know, I had many choices. Where do I turn to? How do I go on with my life? And that's where Crime Survivors came into play. And that's where I believe my faith. I believe, you know, I didn't know about nonprofits. I didn't know about the court system or anything. But I turned my tragedy around to triumph. And I turned it into survival to be able to take my personal experiences and be able to help other victims of violent crime. I was a caterer event planner. I still have my catering business, but I was a caterer event planner, very successful here in Orange County. And you know what? I said, I want to help people. I want to put mm-hmm. community above myself. Mm-hmm. And so for me personally, I was victimized. I'm not a victim. I survived. I'm a survivor. But I'm also Patricia Winskunas, right. And I'm also someone in the community that wants to make a difference. And that's my story. It goes a lot broader than that. You can go to crimesurvivors.org. But I want people in the community to know to share themselves, to share their tragedies, their triumphs, and to be able to survive and live life to the fullest.
And that they don't have to go it alone, which I think is a big issue with a lot of people because of whether it's the sense of guilt, misguided maybe in some cases, but there's just, you know, why does it happen to me? What did I do? There's all that the stuff that plays in our minds when life just hands us some things that are just unbelievable and almost impossible to deal with, you know, and right. They come out of nowhere. So, you know, I think, you know, you're still catering. You're just catering to people in a different way.
That's true.
That's cool.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
and it sounds like you found your calling through tragedy. And, I mean, for those who are listening, I think part of what we are going to try to cover today is sort of transitioning and getting past tragedy, not necessarily sidestepping it, not necessarily burying it, but, you know, going through the process and allowing yourself to go through that process. And sometimes it's short to some people, for some people, sometimes it's long, sometimes it's a lifetime that you go through it. But to have the sense of empowerment that you are a worthy person, that you should give yourself that gift.
Absolutely.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, Tanya, I'm going to turn to you and ask you the same question. How do you find yourself doing what you're doing today? I know that in your case, a lot of the people that are listening, and you know, we put out a little bit press release before the show. Obviously, you and your family, just to put it mildly, dealt with your grief for your sister very publicly, and all of a sudden, I think you've said it many times, you know, all of a sudden there's cameras in your face and there's no privacy anymore and you can't grieve in private and, you know, everything that you do is basically being looked at, scrutinized, reported on, and what have you. So I don't really want to delve into a lot of that, whatever you're comfortable with, mm-hmm. but I really, my interest is I'd like to know how you find yourself where you are today.
Yeah, you know what? After when Nicole was murdered, I basically, being the baby of the family, yeah. was being told, you know, let your oldest sister, that everybody knows, Denise, to be the voice of the family, and right. thank God she wore that hat, because I don't think I would have ever been able to survive what she had to endure. But as a counselor and somebody who has that DNA, who has that counseling DNA, I found it very traumatizing because I couldn't go out there and help people. And when you want to help people so badly and you want to counsel and you want to serve and you're being told not to, it was mm-hmm. like telling me not to breathe. So I suppressed passion. I suppressed my ability, my desire to really want to educate the community on this epidemic of domestic violence that I was mm-hmm. hearing about in the court for the very first time that my right. sister had endured. So all of that suppression, basically, it exploded. So when people have said to me in the past, how in the world did you get through it? I said, obviously, I didn't, mm-hmm. because 10 years after her murder, I was thrown into a psych ward. On October 9th, 2004, I basically flipped out. I lashed out at everybody in my family. I almost hit my dad. I actually blamed my mom and my dad for Nicole's murder. Where that came from, I have no clue. Oh. I yelled at Denise and called her horrific names, where we didn't even talk for an entire year. And I proceeded out of the living room and went to my bedroom, and I poured a bottle of Klonopin in one hand because I was on an anti-anxiety. Basically, it's a tranquilizer. It's the world's worst drug, I believe, most highly addictive right now. I was on that because the trigger for this mental break was the cancellation of my wedding. Mm-hmm. So you said an operative word. How did you deal with you know, the death? We dealt with it. We didn't cope with it.
Right.
Two totally different things. Right. And I never learned how to cope with the grief, with the pain. And we're talking a lot of pain and losses from childhood also. We just need to, you know,
just compound it.
Yeah. And it just built up and built up. And I was done. I was so done. So Denise, on my way to my bedroom, Denise caught me and she grabbed my shoulders, literally grabbed my shoulders. And she was saying, you need coping skills. You need, you know, you need to get control of yourself. You need coping skills. I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, what are those? Where do right, I get them? Right, where can I buy right. them? Where can I find them? And it didn't make any sense. And I proceeded to go to my bedroom. I poured the bottle of Klonopin in one hand, bottle of red wine in the other, and I was done. So it's taken me a good, almost 11 years now to share my story, how I attempted a suicide. And my sister Dominique, thankfully, interrupted that moment. And I said, get me the heck out of here before I hurt myself or someone around me. Mm-hmm. So I was aware enough, mm-hmm. thank God. And that's when I knew, in hindsight now that I know that I'm here for a greater purpose. And the next day, she took me, that evening, Dominique had taken me up to my girlfriend's mom's house. I decompressed, I disengaged from the stress and the chaos that I always coach people on today, where it's like, in the moment of chaos, in the moment of heat, you don't get anywhere. So right. disengage from it. And next day, she calls me up at my girlfriend's mom's house and says, are you ready? And I said, yep, where are we going? Mm-hmm. And she goes, well, South Coast Medical, which is now St. Joe's in Laguna Beach.
Laguna Beach, right.
They basically have a bed for you. And I said, let's go. And I was a psych patient for 10 days. And I was angry, and I was mad, and I was sad, and but I was never a victim. It's like I knew that I needed to be there, but I was mad that I needed to be there. Mm-hmm. But once I got out of my own way and I sat on the edge, and I think it was like day four, and I sat on the edge of my bed and I got mad enough and I got sick and tired enough why this was happening to me. And I prayed and I meditated and I said, God, help me. Whoever your God is, this isn't a religious show, but it's like whatever that is for you or whoever that is for you, sometimes you can't get through these big things on your own.
No, that inner strength and that spirituality, and regardless of what faith you adhere to is huge. And in times like that, I think even I saw it somewhere I heard you say somewhere where, you know, for those who don't know where that facility is, it's right on PCH.
Right.
Right?
Right.
It has unbelievable views of the ocean, right?
It's incredible.
Didn't you say one time that, you know,
I want to go back. I do. I want to go back because it's such a respite. It's, you know, you don't have to worry about makeup. You don't have to worry about your computer. You don't have to worry about your phone calls. Right. You don't even need to wash your face. You don't even need to take a shower if you don't want to.
Right. I mean, come on now. You don't have to go back there to get that.
No, I don't. I can do that at home. In fact, I did that. No, just kidding.
I think you pay more for it, though, at the Montage down the street.
Yes, right. You do. But really, I had to have that wake-up call. I had to have that trigger happen. I needed to meet that person in my life to cancel that wedding for me to face who the real Tanya is. Mm-hmm. And the real Tanya, the old Tanya, was codependent, needy, sheltered, very naive. I'm still naive, but not as naive as I was. But the new Tanya who emerged was, you know what, I'm self-confident, I'm self-assured. If you don't like me, I don't care. Not everybody needs to like me. I just know who I am and always do the right thing. And I think sometimes, sadly, for some of us, we need to have something big happen for us to really learn who we are. I don't wish it upon anybody, and neither does Patricia, I bet.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Well, everybody's journey is different. Yeah. I firmly believe that. And you know, people are put in your life, it almost sounds like a cliche, for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, that reason is not necessarily positive at the moment, but it is part of your journey, part of your learning curve, if you will. And, yeah, I mean, I think, was it 4 days before the wedding that wedding got canceled? So, yeah, that person was put in your life.
For a reason.
And I think the awareness, it's phenomenal. A lot of people go through tragedy, I find, that whether it's because they're navigating it on their own, maybe, because they somehow assume that there should be a price to pay that is their real personal, you know, their internal spirit, their real personality gets lost in the process.
Yeah.
And in some cases lost forever. I mean, it could be years and years and years, and then they're so out of touch with those things. We talked about it earlier before the show, where, you know, you go through what defines you, and you define yourself as being what you're going through,
right,
or what you've encountered, or you're a mom, or you're a teacher, or whatever. But, you know, Patricia, you said it, you know, but who is Patricia?
Right.
And the hope is that you go through that process, for the lack of a better word, sometimes it feels a lot more than just a process, right? But to go through that process, and on the end of it, your reward to yourself, or your gift to yourself, is that you are actually given an opportunity to reconnect with that person.
Right.
That is there, that's been buried under whatever experiences or the tragedies that have encountered, and you've had to survive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But now I think one of you has it on their website where it's not just survive,
it's thrive.
But it's thrive. There you go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, we all have experiences, and we all have tragedies on numerous levels, whether it's, you know, a loss of a cat to a loss of a husband, a rape, sexual assault, whatever your tragedy is, we all have some sort of tragedy, and it's immeasurable. You can't measure somebody else's pain. But we can't make that our identity. We have to really make a decision and make a commitment. We talked about that word earlier.
Right.
To make the commitment to not allow that to be our identity, but rather to identify with it, so then we can reach out and help other people in our community. And I think Patricia and I, we've gone through hell and back with our personal experiences, and we've had to grieve.
Can you say that again, please?
I forgot what I said.
We went through hell and
back. We went through hell and back.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
And we still go through it. We're still going through it, but we have the resources and the tools now to really navigate through the new tragedies and the new traumas, because you know what? We're hit with it daily.
Right.
You know?
But we're allowing our moments, because all of us, no matter what you've endured in your life, we all have moments. Good moments, happy moments, sad moments, angry moments.
Daily. Sure.
So it's all about how you navigate your way through all of that, you know, and our mission really, and our message from both of us is
to really encourage people not to be a victim of your circumstance. Don't be that victim, because you know what? Life is so good, and yes, it's hard, and yes, it's challenging at times. But man, I tell you, once you find your support team, mm-hmm. you're not at this thing called life alone.
So let's talk about that, because again, I think everybody who's going through something, again, whether it's from shame-based or guilt-based, or I somehow, in a twisted way, feel like I deserve what's happening mm-hmm. to me, what, in your personal experiences and what you, how you would maybe convey that to people that are going through it right now, how do you seek out or how do you go about doing that? Because I also know that there's a few books that I've read when I was dealing just with my own stuff, and one of them was called Safe People, and it's I'm gonna butcher these guys' names in Laguna Beach. It's two doctors that Townsend
and Cloud.
Cloud, thank mm-hmm. you. So, and great books on boundaries. Yeah. There's a whole boundary series that's just unbelievable.
It's good.
Where you know, I knew this, but I had to actually read it. Where it said, you know, boundaries are permeable. Mm-hmm. They're not a barrier. It's a permeable thing, and you get to choose which way the flow goes. But there's a thing about safe people. And so when you're in, you're kind of in that vulnerable position where you're feeling like I'm going through this and I need help, but I don't know how to go about asking for help. In fact, maybe up till that point, I've been told suck it up and just deal with it, you know. And I'll pull the sort of the gender card here and say, especially for guys, it's like mm-hmm. yeah, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and right. you know,
carry on.
Shrug it off and yep. move on and get on with your day. It's okay not to do that, guys. You know, it's actually okay to seek the help. But in your particular cases, how did you filter through? Was it an existing support system of friends and family? I'm sure I hear it all the time that when people go through this, there are certain people that are around them that as they gain more and more awareness, they realize maybe those are not the best people around them, that they're basically, they don't have the ability to be there for them in these situations. And everybody wants to help, but not everybody is really capable mm-hmm. of helping us when we're going through those. In your particular cases, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
I think for me personally, I think, and also if you can read The Gift of Fear by Gavin D. Becker, I don't know if you've read it, it's amazing. And I think sometimes, like in my personal situation throughout my life, I learned to almost gravitate towards the ones that the normal for me would be to be abused or victimized, or for people to bully me or manipulate me or hurt me or harm me, and me say sorry to them, mm-hmm. thinking that I did something wrong.
Yeah.
And I know so many people think that, and we have our families, we're brought into this world by our parents, and we have to be able to know that we don't have to be alone. And that we're seeking validation, no matter what income level you have, no matter what race you are, no matter what. So many people seek validation from outside sources. But I believe that we need to seek the validation and the love and the acceptance and appreciation from within our hearts and our souls.
Absolutely.
And within our faith. And I think sometimes, and we can, I still, to this day, I still, for some reason, my one friend laughs at me all the time and she says, there could be 100 people in the room. And there's two of them that are not your supporters, that bring you down, that, you know, no matter what you do, it could be gold and you could hand them a $100 bill. Mm-hmm. And they're still going to find fault. But she said, instead of you going to the 98 that are supporters and love you, you always gravitate towards the two.
I'm going
to
make them like me, right? You really, really like me, right?
Yeah. So I think that's we all need to work and realize that no matter if it's your family or friends or people that you work with, you don't have to go to certain people.
Right.
You don't have to tell everything in your life. You don't have to trust everyone, but please trust your gut instinct. Right. We're mm-hmm. given that red flag, mm-hmm. that gut feeling for a reason, for a purpose. So trust it, acknowledge it, recognize, and live by it.
Yeah.
Tanya?
And I did when I was going through my tragedy after the loss of Nicole, I gravitated to an abusive boyfriend. Mm-hmm. My sisters had their kids, my mom had the grandkids, and my mom and dad had the grandkids. And I needed somebody, so I gravitated onto a very unhealthy, controlling relationship. Not physically abusive, but abusive on a whole variety of levels. But I needed that. And so that was the old Tanya. But when I had my psychotic break or my mental breakdown, whatever you want to call it, my breakthrough, perhaps that would be a better way. Mm-hmm. My family didn't get me. So my family mm-hmm. became my inpatient friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my outpatient friends were my family, and I moved out because I couldn't live in the dynamic of the family anymore because they didn't get it. They didn't know what depression was. They didn't know what I was going through.
Right.
And I needed to connect with people who got me. And once I got into the inpatient and outpatient programs, I realized that I wasn't alone. And that became my own family. And I moved out with a fellow psych patient, which if you're in this situation, I don't recommend you doing that. But I needed to connect. Mm-hmm. And still today, there's two women who I'm still very dear friends with, who we were in the in and outpatient with. So there are support groups for you. I don't you know, recommend going into a psych ward.
Right.
And, you know, because there are preventative tools for us to not be able to go there. But if you need to go there, if that is your safe
you
place,
give your permission to do that.
Yes, yeah. I give you permission. Give yourself permission to do that.
Exactly. Give
it's
yourself
a safe place.
Give yourself permission to do that.
Yes.
Safe place is a great word.
Yeah.
You know, we've got so much more to talk about here. We're going to go to a break. I just want to, again, if you're joining us just now, I want to just, you know, in the studio today we have Tanya Brown, and she's an accomplished speaker, advocate, author. I don't know how much more titles you can put behind your name.
I don't want any more.
Okay.
So, life coach.
her recent book, Finding Peace Amid the Chaos. Thank you for the copy.
You're welcome.
And then Patricia, and I'm going to try this one more time, Winskunas.
Very good.
There you go. It's getting easier. From Crime Survivors, and we'll be back with the two ladies. If you guys are calling in, you can call in the show, 949-330-7761, and we'll be right back. All right, let's get back to the Rad Life with his radical guests here. They are radical. I like it. You know, we pride ourselves from day one when we set up to do this show is to really not avoid difficult topics. And I think we've been true to that, Paul, so far.
I think so. And the question that I asked off when we were off the air here, maybe I'll ask it here because it's just so hanging in the air here. You know, both women experienced an awful tragedy.
Yeah.
And didn't get justice. Patricia was saying that the man who attacked her only got 120 days, and of course we know what happened to O.J. Simpson. And I don't know how you move past it. That's supposed to be the healing when the justice system kicks in and catches the bad guy, and that allows you to feel that justice has been served.
Yeah.
But when justice does, when you don't feel that sense of justice,
do you move past it?
You know, thanks for asking that because, you know, that question is out there looming a lot, and I think it's different for everyone. I'm sure my situation is different from Tanya's as well as many other people. And I've spoken and I've talked about that, and I've really said to people, you know, for some reason, I don't know if it was my immaturity or lack of education or what it was within the system, but for some reason, I was thinking when I went through those court doors that I was going to get justice, that he was never going to be able to hurt anybody else, and then it was going to be like the court doors would open at the end of the trial, and it was an alleluia moment. I was going to go back to my catering, to my life, and it was as if nothing would happen. For some reason, that's what I kept thinking. And I talked to many other victims about that their children have been murdered or and they've been raped or sexually assaulted or whatever it may be. And whether or not it was not guilty, whether it was 120 days, whether it was guilty and a life sentence, I would say that we need to set ourselves up to say we're going to focus on ourselves.
Right.
We're going to focus on our faith, on our family, our community, our friendships, and most importantly, again, ourselves. Because whatever happens within the legal system, mm-hmm. it is not going to heal us. It's not going to bring us forward in our future. But I do know for myself personally, I had to forgive the judge in my case. I had to forgive our legal system. I had to forgive our justice so-called system in order to have hope and to heal through the process, just like I had to forgive Jeffrey Kalavos.
Well, and you know, what I'm also hearing when you're speaking about this is there's still a residual of, you know, as much as you forgive, you still, you know, you have sort of a distrust in the justice system and whether it's actually going to do what it needs to, at least it promotes that it's going to do. And I'm not picking on the justice system. I mean, I'm just saying.
I'll pick on it.
Okay, so Patricia's picking on the justice system and Tanya. So it's just what I'm trying to convey to people is even when you do forgive, you are still left with some of these feelings that are still there, and you got to come to terms with it being okay that you have those, and that, that it is an ongoing process. There is no, it's not a, okay, guess what? We, this day, this time, whatever, boom, I'm done dealing with this now. It's something that actually you continue to, in one form or the other, deal with. It's just you deal with it better maybe over time.
I don't think that we can say it's okay in a sense, even though I have forgiven the system.
Right.
I mean, recently with the recall of Judge Mark Kelly that's happening here in Orange County.
Yeah.
That has triggered me 13 years later. Same situation, different circumstances.
Yeah.
That's why I started Crime Survivors. I was able to get Judge off the bench because of my case. So it's triggered me and all of what I endured through the legal process. I've been contacted by hundreds of other survivors that are triggered. So
right.
It's never going to be okay,
right.
But we do need to be able to move on.
So do you find that, because you've put yourself in a position where this is sort of a purpose. You're going to be contacted by people now, a year, 10 years from now, on different cases, different situations, different judges, what have you. Do you find that personally you have a better ability maybe to not necessarily compartmentalize, but to where you leave that where it is when you're doing that, and so that Patricia doesn't get lost in the process?
I am human. I've realized, I just found out recently with the picture that was in the paper, that I am human. And for the most part, for the last 13 years, I've been able to keep it together as a leader and being out in the community and helping other victims, because I want other victims to know that they can survive, they can thrive as well. But I am also a human being, and I'm also triggered at different times. And this case recently has triggered me. But I want other people to know that whether it's the first 24 hours or 20 years down the road, you can have a moment. You can be triggered,
mm-hmm.
and you can say, you can share it. You don't have to stay in your room and cry. You don't have to be ashamed or blamed by community and society.
Right.
You can stand up within yourself and say, I'm human. This happened to me a long time ago, and I'm still maybe coping and dealing with it, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I can put the passion of what my purpose is towards other people that are enduring the same thing.
You know, somebody tweeted in and wants to know, I don't know what you're referring to. They said the case or some case or something you're talking about.
Go ahead, Patricia. Yeah, it's a current case going on.
It is a current case. It is where a 3-year-old was sodomized here in Orange County.
Oh, my God.
And the judge, Judge Mark Kelly, right now, where we're trying to recall him, it was a guilty verdict. They should have, he should have given him 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
He took it upon himself to say this 3-year-old was the one that walked into the garage, which is offensive to even think that it would be a 3-year-old's fault.
Right.
He considered this 3-year-old, 4-year-old now, in the court process as being a healthy child, which is also offensive, especially me as a survivor to say that. And then on the other side of the things, he reduced the sentence from 25 years down to 10 years because he felt that it was an injustice if this person would serve 25 years. And I think it's offensive. I think that we need to get a judge off the bench, because I don't think that we should have judges that are writing legislation or writing laws, and you need to follow the book. And this person victimized, and it was violent. The judge kept saying it wasn't a violent crime.
Do they have that much leeway?
Sodomized.
I thought, aren't there sort of minimum sentencing requirements for different crimes and stuff?
There is. And the book and the law and everything said 25 years, but he took it upon himself to say that it wasn't a violent crime, that he thought this child would be okay, but yet he doesn't know. And I know our district attorney here in Orange County is going to appeal it,
right.
But the community and the society, I'm working side by side with Brian Scott, which is an amazing guy. He's a father that came forward to start this Facebook page, Remove Mark Kelly, and they're collecting, you know, not only money, but we need to now collect over 90,000 signatures.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's as recent as what, a week, 10
correct.
Days?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean,
so those listening later, this is in April of 2015 that we're taping this here, doing this show. Is there some place people can go to get more information or to and list support?
Well, there is the Facebook page that Patricia mentioned.
Right, and it's Remove Judge Mark Kelly from the Bench.
And how do you spell that?
And it's M-A-R-K.
M-A-R-C.
M-A-R-C-K-E-L-L-Y.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's just ballooned very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not an isolated reaction against the judgment in this case. There's just, in Orange County, it's just snowballing right now.
Yeah.
For people like that may be listening to the show later.
Makes me wonder what happened in his life for him to make that decision.
you would think know. Involving a child that they would throw the book
you
at.
You never know.
Yeah.
It's. I was shocked. I heard of it. It went so fast from judgment coverage in the paper to just full on brush fire as far as the reaction.
Which is, I think the Facebook page had like over 16,000 likes within like 48 hours.
48 hours. Yeah.
I got to see if I even liked it.
You better like
it. I know, I will like it.
Yes, Tanya liked it, and if she didn't like it, she'll like it.
I will like it now. I know.
Okay, so Tanya, you said something before the break, or maybe it was right during the break, and it kind of follows off on what we were talking about, Patricia, is really the word surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because it's unavoidable. You're going to walk up, you're going to get up, you're going to get dressed, you're going to go out there, you're going to interact with other people. It's not a controlled, you know, environment, biosphere that we live in, and things are going to happen. Anything from somebody who's going to cut you off and have some road rage to, you know, to people vandalizing people's cars because they have nothing better to do with their time.
Right.
You know, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Just somebody decking you. You know, a dog biting you, you know.
Literally. I was assaulted by a person and a dog in one day. I'm just like, what kind of crazy world
somebody
is
just
this?
Walked up and hit you?
Yeah, somebody I know. You know, but this is the thing. It's I'm working with an addict right now and trying to get her the help that she needs, but you know, when you try to continually make somebody want to see the help that is out there for them to receive, I can't make them do that.
They have to be ready.
So if I can't get my words out today, it's because I'm traumatized. I really am. I'm traumatized today. And
what are you doing to get help for your support? You're helping so many other people. Let other people also help you.
No, and you know what I did? I wanted to play with my dog because that's my joy.
That's your therapy.
And I got bit.
And then the dog bit you.
I was bit by my
so
dog
I went to the
twice,
beach.
And I had to go to the hospital for stitches in my face two times. And people thought I was crazy for keeping the dog. And after the dog bit me, I'm still hugging and loving the dog. And they're like, well, you wouldn't do that if it was an abuser. And I'm like,
God. You're kind of right.
So you have stitches from a dog bite? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. I have stitches from a dog bite on my lip. Okay, so I guess we're in good company here today.
See,
right?
We are in good company.
Dog bites all around.
I got a scratch on my face. I got bite marks and a big old bruise on my left foot. I mean, it was a crazy day. So what do? I mean, and I'm telling you, people, it's like chaos happens. You know, one day when I was writing this book, my co-writer, William Croyle, was like, how you doing today? And I'm like, man, I'm just trying to find peace amid all this chaos. Right. You know, when I wrote the book, my dad had Alzheimer's. He passed in July, last July. My mom, we were driving her to chemo and radiation. Well, my older sisters were while I was babysitting dad. I was going through graduate school and writing a book. So my dad had Alzheimer's, and it's like a 90 at that time. Well, he was 91 when he died, but it was like an old person in a two-year-old body.
Mm-hmm.
So there was never any downtime for at least 5 years. No downtime. And so I'm telling you, when I share with people, there is chaos in my life every single day, but I can't divorce some of the people in my family, so I have to accept it.
Right.
And I have to find the ways to navigate my way through the mess. Mm-hmm. And we have messes at home, we have messes at work, we have messes in our car, and I'm not talking about like messy with your pens and papers and stuff. I'm talking about the emotional mess. We have it. But how do you cope with it? You know, and because I don't like that word deal. Because dealing is like, oh, I'll get to it later. I'll sweep it under the desk or under the rug. I'll get to it later. Where with me, I offer solutions, which are like real strong coping skills that I actually share in my book. Because when William and I wrote the book, I said, I don't want this to be just another read. We all read great books.
Right.
But I want this to be a real insightful, introspective experience for people. And so he said, okay, fine, you know, what worked for you? And he goes, look for all your tools that you learned when you were in the hospital and that you still use today.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, give me 5 or 7. So I came up with 12. So I kind of call
overachiever.
Right. Exactly. No, I'm anything but an overachiever, but I call it my little 12-step program, I guess, in the world of AA, even though I'm not in substance recovery, but behavioral recovery on a daily basis. You know, I have
one day at a time.
I have a tendency of getting depressed. Like, and I don't portray to the public like I'm perfect. I just shared with everybody I'm traumatized. I battled with a lot of depression yesterday, but you know what? I don't stay there because I now know how to disengage,
mm-hmm.
how to feel it, because you know what? Me not feeling for so many years put me into the hospital. Mm-hmm. So now I know how important it is for us to feel the stress, feel the anxiety, feel the pain, feel the trauma, like really feel it.
Right.
But don't stay there. You know, do what you can to start like refocusing your attention, divert your attention to, you know what? Look where we live. We live in Orange County, people. People everywhere from out of the country save all year round to visit the place where we live.
Correct.
So there is beauty no matter what community you live in.
Right.
You could live in Cobbington. You can live in the barrios of Santa Ana. Step outside and see something beautiful because you know what? Look up in the sky. There's a bird.
Weather, no humidity.
Right?
Ocean within,
perfect.
Within, you know, if you're going to drive 10 minutes or whatever, and you know, you got the hills on one side, you got the mountains. I mean, you know,
take a walk,
go outside, you know,
don't
turn to the drugs,
don't
to
turn
alcohol,
to drugs and alcohol,
to the cutting, to the shopping, to the eating. You know, I was laughing recently and I said, you know, I've gained over 20 pounds recently and I'm like so miserable about it. But I mean, sometimes when I'm coping,
mm-hmm. we eat,
I'm dealing. And so I said to my friend, she's a psychiatrist. And I said, so, you know, and I don't go see her as a psychiatrist, but she's my good friend. So I'm sitting in there and I'm talking to her and I'm saying, so is it really bad? Does it mean I'm not coping and only dealing if I'm sitting here eating a half a gallon of chocolate ice cream in my bed? And she's like, you know.
Depends on over how long a period of time it is.
Patricia,
right?
I'm like no longer your friend. Make an appointment.
That's so true.
You know, and that's one thing with Patricia and I. We're eaters. That's how we dealt with it.
Same,
you know,
here.
And thank God. Thank God it was food and not like meth and heroin. You mm-hmm. know what,
right.
you guys, for all you listeners, I'm a victim of an addict right now. I allowed an assault to happen because I just happened, and it happened so fast. But the person who's battling with this has unresolved grief, unresolved anger, unresolved trauma, unresolved pain.
Mm-hmm.
And then what ends up happening is that not only are you hurting yourself, but you're hurting for people. You are hurting those who love you and who are trying to help you.
Yeah.
And I don't want that for people.
Well, and that's what we were talking about, safe people and boundaries. And it's very important to establish those. And, you know, Patricia, you're saying about the eating, okay? First of all, you get older, it's harder to shed the pounds, right?
So that's what my doctor keeps telling me.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difference between enabling yourself to persist down a path that you know is not healthy.
Right.
Yes. And then also forgive the difference between that and forgiving yourself when you do actually want to have that extra slice of, or maybe pint of ice cream or whatever it is, right?
Or I said half gallon. I didn't say pint.
Okay, sorry. I'm bigger than you, I guess. My portion, my substance of choice is a pint. But okay, so I got to know, though, what's the flavor?
Well, right now I like two flavors, and that's Ben and Jerry's, and I like the everything because then I get the candy in there also. So it's a combination of both, and then I also like mint chocolate chip.
So you got a traditionalist side of you and the side that just wants it all and doesn't want to make up any choices. Give up anything.
Right.
Okay. Paul, do you have something you're...
I support mint chocolate chips, so that's all I wanted to say.
I'm a cookies and cream kind of gal.
I did have one question, though, as I came to mind as I'm listening to this. I'm wondering how the two of you met, and the bigger question is there a community of people that come together that find each other that have been victimized or hurt? Or, I mean, because you all share some tragedy and trauma, do you sort of gravitate together and find each other?
Some of us work together and some of us don't. Some of us try to help one another and then some don't. But, you know, the Brown family will always stay in my heart and in my soul forever, because when I was going through what I was going through, I was telling Denise this recently, and I think I shared with you, Tanya, as well. You know, I thought of you all as celebrities.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And I guess it's because, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, I grew up in Illinois in a small town. I moved to California in 94. So, again, I was like a mouse. I was very vulnerable, whatever, and then going through everything I went through. And I didn't really know the dynamic. So I just seen you as celebrities. And so when I first called you, it was unbelievable to me that you took the time to listen to me.
I think we were on the phone for over an hour at first. Denise came to part of the trial for me, and then we sat down at your apartment for over 3 hours, and I was just so amazed that you took that time to care about me after what you've endured as a family. And just love your mom, your dad, your whole family has really taken me, always came to our events, our programs, services, supported the organization financially, you know, through the years. And I'll never forget that. That's always in my heart and soul. And to now be collaborating and partnering with you to see your growth and to be able to call you sincerely a friend and a family member. And so many of us, I think, in the community and movement, we do collaborate. We do work together. And some of us, we really do become friends and family to help one another.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember that day.
Well, we start by saying, you know, how do you transition from tragedy? I think you guys just you just exemplified it, Patricia. Basically, here's the two of you, united by tragedy, in different tragedy, common threads in certain aspects, and empowering each other, providing that support to one another, being examples to other people of how to exactly do that, to transition, and having also the realness that this is something that is part of who we are. We can't expunge this from our existence. This is part of what happened. This is part of what we carry, and yet we still transition past that, and we build the awareness and the strength, the forgiveness to ourselves first and foremost, maybe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then by example, which I think, you know, is probably the most powerful way to go about conveying stuff, sharing that openly. I don't want to miss out on doing this at the end. We get too close to the clock. I really, really want to take a minute and thank you both for being here and being so vulnerable and open and sharing like this, because it's very important for people to be empowered by this kind of exchange. Nobody's alone.
No.
Nobody's alone, and there are people out there that will help you. I mean, whether it's just going to your website, for example, Patricia, you know, crime survivors, or contacting Tanya. There's a whole bunch of resources out there, and allow yourself, if you're going through something that's really trying, allow yourself for people to be there for you.
Yeah. Allowance. I love that. I love that word, allow. Allow yourself to pick up that phone.
Yeah.
Allow yourself to send that email. Allow yourself to connect with people who really, really get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not walking in your shoes. I will never say I understand exactly what you're going through, because I don't. You know, our lives are different, but I understand maybe the dynamic, or I understand the emotion, or, you know, just, and then when you connect with people like Patricia and myself and all the other women and men that we know who are survivors of either a suicide, depression, or a victimization on any level, you realize same story, different face.
Right.
You know, you're not alone, and it's in that isolation when you do feel you're alone, that's the dangerous part.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is happening to you right now, have the courage to pick up that phone and call one of us. Call, you know, I've even told people, like, if in moments of real desperation and they don't have family, they don't have friends, and they live, like, in a different country, I go, walk yourself to the hospital.
Right. Right.
Call somebody to take you to the hospital. Call 911. Get yourself
take
to
yourself
that safe.
Take yourself physically out of that environment.
Do not let what happened to my attempt. That doesn't need to happen to you. If you're recognizing that you're going into that, you're drinking too much, you're starting to, you know, pop your Klonopin or your OxyContin, or you're going into heroin, whatever it is, stop yourself now and understand that there is support for you. Don't allow yourself to go too deep.
And that you're not the only one. I think this is very, very important. You are not the only one who's going through this right now.
Right.
You're not the only one who's gone
alone.
Through it, and you will not be the last one that goes through it. You know, and I'm not taking away from anybody's individual pain.
Right.
But at the same time, there are people out there that have transitioned this that can help you. You can then maybe press on that, what your own experience is, to people that are, you know, it happens every day. It's underreported. And we basically do it to ourselves by keeping in the shadows.
Yeah. Don't be silenced.
Don't be silenced.
We have a habit to be silenced because of the shame, the blame.
Mm-hmm.
What are people going to say? What are they going to do? So we need to talk about it. We need to put a face, put a voice to it. and move away from the shame and the blame, yeah. because we're all human. We are human.
We are all human. Now, Patricia and I, we get it. We know what it's like to be victimized. We know what it's like to be re-victimized. We know what it's like to be in depression and, you know, think suicidal thoughts or attempt a suicide. We understand the pain.
Right.
And but what we've done is that we've transformed and we've taken our tragedies and our traumas to really help people move forward. Patricia's doing that with crime survivors. I'm doing that with coaching, walking people through the tools that helped me. Now I want to help them through right. Solutions Life Coaching, giving people solutions. We need solutions.
Okay, so before we go, Tanya, how do people get hold of you?
They can reach me at tanyabrown.net. Okay. It's T-A-N-Y-A. And brown, like the color, .net. Make sure it's an N-E-T at the end. And, you know, just, I'm here for you.
That's wonderful, actually. Yeah. I think that sums it up really nicely. And Patricia, how can people get hold of you?
If you want to go to crimesurvivors.org, you can also go to patriciawinskunis.com, and you can find out more information on how to reach me, how to reach the organization. And I just want everyone to know with faith there is hope and that we're here to help and support and to empower and strengthen you.
Thank you, ladies. And for the listeners, you need to get hold of us. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts about the show. You can email me at Rod, R-A-A-D, period, Gantus, G-H-A-N-T-O-U-S, at gmail.com. Or you can visit us at The Rod Life on Facebook. And we look forward to being with you again next week. Thank you, ladies, for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gantos, brought to you on the one and only octalkradio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.